I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics Viral Tubing Mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know, the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS. .com/thrive for 20% off your first order. Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Hi, I'm Chanti.
And I'm Lynx, and you're listening to Muses.
Enjoy the show. Yeah, so you're telling me that you're dealing with a little bit of seasonal allergies right now?
Yeah, oh my goodness. I think it's also every once in a while, especially when CK sheds.
Yeah.
I notice it a lot more. And this morning I woke up and I was a little puffy and everything. And then he sat on my lap to get some like morning cuddles, and after that I was just a mess, and yeah, I haven't been able to put my contacts in. I'm just like, I was scratching, and I'm all right now. I'm looking forward to hearing a story. I'm glad I don't have to read the screen this time. I'm glad it's you presenting.
Yeah. So if you need to stop to blow your nose or whatever, and I'll try and edit out any sniffles if they happen.
Appreciate that.
All right. Well, today I'm presenting an episode. It's hard to say what it's about. I don't want to just say this is a story about the Allman Brothers, because it's not. Like, it's not just the story about the Allman Brothers band. It's based on a book that I read called Please Be With Me, A Song for My Father, Dwayne Allman, by Galadriel Allman.
Ooh, what a pretty name. Never heard of that.
I was going to ask you, do you know where Galadriel comes from?
No. It's familiar, but yeah, tell me.
It's a Lord of the Rings character.
Oh, that's right. That I was like, I know it, but like, Lord of the Rings. Wow, I never would have thought Allman was a Lord of the Rings fan.
Yes, and I'll save it for when we get to her birth, about how it came to be.
Okay,
because cool. It'll be fun to get to know everybody a little bit before I just let you know how it came to be. So what's really wonderful about this book is that it's an Allman Brothers Band biography all in itself. It has every detail you could possibly want up until the early 70s. It doesn't go far beyond 1972, but for a real how the band came to be, it's absolutely all there. Now, I'm not exactly going to cover every single tiny detail of Duane and Greg Allman's rise to fame and to who they came to be, but I'll add in enough. What I'm really going to talk about in this episode is the women around them who shaped them to be who they became.
Amazing. And yeah, who better to tell this story than his daughter?
So that brings me to my next point, which is that, you know how a lot of times books are written by a musician or by somebody and it's with an actual writer and the actual writer brings everything, I guess, that they can't to life. Well, Galadriel is a real writer.
Oh,
she's
nice.
You could tell that she got whatever it is that those Allman men had in regards to writing and creativity and poetry. She got it. This was one of the most well-written books I've ever read.
Wow. Oh, this must have been such a great one to... And so random that you picked it. Because you're not like a huge Allman Brother person.
No. I didn't even know that much about them. And I listened to the music while I was writing up the episode. And it was beautiful. It was beautifully written. I love all of the different stories. I loved the detail. So I really leave out so much.
I'll
for the sake of
keeping
things succinct. So definitely a great book to read. Highly recommend it. So the book was written in 2014, rather recently enough. And Galadriel began writing this book when she turned 40 years old. It took her 2 years.
Wow.
To write it. And what she did was she traveled during that time and she met with everybody from her father's past, especially in regards to his musicianship that was available to talk to her about him.
Wow, what an amazing journey that must have been.
Well, it was. The reason why this journey was so important to her is because she was only 2 years old when Duane died. He was 24 years old, and her mother wasn't very forthcoming over the years with detailed information, and Galadriel never entitled to asking a bunch of questions about her father because she didn't want to hurt anyone.
I got it. Yeah.
She didn't want to bring up any. Yeah. So a lot of her life was listening to his music and not really knowing the man behind it. Galadriel starts off her book with a quote by Anais Nin. That's where the myth fails, human love begins. Then we love a human being, not our dream, but a human with flaws.
Wow, that's a good quote.
Yeah, a lot of the books we read have these kind of quotes at the beginning, and I never add them in, but this one I felt was particularly perfect.
Yeah.
Greg Allman calls the book a revelation, and he's not just saying that to be nice. Yeah. Like I said, we've read some really well-written books over the years, and I feel like if they're not, or if they're a little bit, you could tell they're kind of self-published, we don't really point that out too much. We're not really there to put anyone down. We're just glad that the book got written and that the person was brave enough to put their story out there and self-publish it or whatever. But this is not one of those books. This is like, it's pretty flawless.
Amazing.
Yeah. So because Galadriel didn't learn her father's story naturally, she didn't just grow up being like, let me tell you stories about your father. She had to seek it out herself. And so, of course, you feel maybe the sense of emptiness when you know that there's a story there, but you've never really been
absolutely
let in on it.
Yeah. A whole part of her life kind of not there.
Yeah. Galadriel says that her father's story is more than a tragedy. It's a true romance. He fell in love with his guitar and gave his heart away. I quote, "The sound he found helped change the way the world perceived the South. White Southern boys were most known for backward thinking and racist cruelty. My father's guitar sang out idealistic, astounding music that tipped that notion over. The Allman Brothers Band made every Southerner with a radio proud of himself." Once when Galadriel was 4 and she was on the side of the stage in her mother's arm at an Allman Brothers show, Greg took her out of her mother's arms and brought her onto the stage and into the microphone. He said, "This is my brother's little girl and he lives on through her."
Aw, that's so beautiful.
Yeah. Do you know how Duane Allman died?
I don't. Oh, wait. Was it like... no, I feel like it's, is it like a car accident or something?
Very close. It was a motorcycle accident.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. I just wasn't sure if you knew. The Allman Brothers Band became known for their amazing live performances. Their success came fast. Their chemistry was undeniable. It was one of those bands that just had to be a band. As some people may know, may or may not know, 3 different bands inspired, or it said, has inspired Cameron Crowe to create Stillwater in Almost Famous. Yes. And the Allman Brothers Band was one of those bands. Reading this book, I really got a lot of parts of them that became Stillwater.
That must have been fun.
Yeah. Yeah. So you'll hear them when I say them and then we'll point it out as well. So, as I said, this is a great book for the band's biography. You get the very early, early stories of Greg and Duane Allman, their parents, their grandparents, and then, of course, how the band would eventually go from learning their instruments to touring in a van, to touring in a Winnebago, a tour bus, a private jet.
Yeah.
They played dive bars and parks, and then, of course, right as Duane was tragically lost in an accident, stadiums.
Yeah.
Duane himself was extremely sought after as a guitar player by Eric Clapton, Aretha Franklin, Wilson Pickett, King Curtis, and Bog Skaggs.
Wow.
According to Rolling Stone magazine, Duane Allman is remembered as one of the greatest rock guitarists of all time, second only to Jimi Hendrix.
I did not know that he was that well-respected as a guitarist.
Galadriel continues that thought by writing, "Just a few short years into his remarkable career, after creating several of the best-loved rock and roll songs ever recorded, he was killed in a motorcycle accident at the intersection of Hillcrest Avenue and Bartlett Street in Macomb, Georgia, on October 9th, 1971. He was 24 years old and I was 2. We never had the chance to know each other."
Ah, so tragic.
Since the band was number one in America by 1972, Galadriel did have an opportunity to be present at many shows just as a little baby, her mother carrying her through backstage doors. So if you didn't already know, the character Red Dog the Roadie was truly based on a man named Red Dog who was a roadie for the Allman Brothers Band. He was a legend, and even though the family like never knew like if they were seeing them on stage, if they would be hot or cold towards the family and the women with the babies going to see the shows, they could always count on Red Dog to greet them with a huge smile and a hug, and he'd grab Galadriel in one of his arms and take care of his business on the stage with the joint hanging out of his mouth. He kissed her cheeks, called her princess, and said she looked just like her daddy.
Aww.
Galadriel says, "I loved his wild red curls and gruff, scratchy drawl. He may have been a badass, but he was also a prince."
That's so cool that she remembers him, and it sounds like Cameron Crowe captured him perfectly. He was an awesome addition to the film.
Yes. With the band pretty much living to tour, Galadriel was raised in a world of women and children, saying the main things we had in common with the band were our shared losses and our love of the music, which was always a force of good in all of our lives. But as she came to grow up, although her father's music was everywhere, there was a void in her life. And there are very few photos of her mother and her father and herself all together. She wanted to fill the space of knowledge with him to replace the confusion. When Galadriel would ask her mother about her father, she would say, "Listen to him play. His music is the best of him." And we'll get to why, I guess, she
doesn't
want
to.
That's all she would say about him.
Yeah.
It's a familiar story.
I gotcha.
Galadriel says, "How many daughters can lift the needle of a record player and trace backward to the first groove in an album and hear their fathers young, strong, and alive? I have no memories of my father, but even as a young child, I understood he was not lost completely. I could find him in my own pale face and red hair."
Mm-hmm.
So she knew that asking her mother would hurt her. So she was set on searching elsewhere first. And then I think she kind of came back to her. She tells a pretty incredible story about how she was in a junk store in Georgia and found a Rolling Stone magazine from 1971, which was had a memorial cover of him. He was on the cover. The proprietor grabbed it out of her hands and said, "This is not for sale. Do you even have any idea the value of that? Do you even know who Dwayne Allman is?"
Little did he know.
Yeah. So she didn't say anything. She just turned around and walked out. When she was 21, she inherited his beloved Gibson Les Paul guitars that had been kept safe for her by Twiggs Linden, their tour manager and Dwayne's close friend. Galadriel has loaned both of those guitars to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Oh, that's so cool.
So she had stuff like that of his.
Yeah.
When she was in her early 30s, she received a piece of material, a cuff of fancy silk shirt that Eric Clapton gave her father during the Layla recording sessions.
Hmm.
The cuff of the shirt was sent by a stranger who once dated her uncle Greg and had taken the panels, I guess, of the back of the shirt and sold them on eBay for $15,000.
Wow.
So this is kind of giving you an idea of what Dwayne Allman meant to people. Parts of his shirt were being sold for tens of thousands of dollars. That is
it's like little pieces of him on sale. That's crazy.
Exactly. You nailed it. So imagine feeling that way about your father.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, wow.
Exactly. Like, clues about him were scattered everywhere.
Yeah.
He was a fragmented person between those things and ticket stubs and concert posters, hospital records.
Yeah.
She also felt that a lot of his life belonged to strangers.
Absolutely, yeah. It's interesting because it's like the fans owned him at that point. You know?
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting thing.
So what Galadriel did with the cuff of the shirt that she had been mailed is that she put it in a frame. She loaned it to the museum that was built inside the home where she learned to walk. This place is called the Allman Brothers Museum at the Big House.
Amazing that another group or person has like a home that's now a museum of them. That's exactly. So cool.
And so it's in a case in a room where the band once practiced.
Awesome.
Last thing I'll say about his legacy impacting her as she grew up is that people would notice her last name, like on her credit card, and like hold her up in line to tell her about an experience they had at like an Allman Brothers concert back in the day. And she said that she has seen several tattoos of her father's face on person's body.
It's interesting because obviously Frances Bean Cobain hasn't written a book, but it would probably be so similar, her experiences growing up with people really idolizing and taking ownership of this person that you really are connected to, but also never got a chance to truly connect to and grow with, you know?
Yeah. Galadriel wanted something more personal from her father, obviously, besides these like fragmented pieces that she was finding from strangers. Mm-hmm. You know, she felt like an outsider. And even wanting to approach her Uncle Greg for information, she was feeling like someone who was approaching him for an autograph, like maybe she wasn't entitled to ask him. She also didn't feel entitled to write and put the exposure up for public consumption, but writing was the only thing she ever wanted to do. And she knew that she was born into an incredible story. As she says, an epic tale starring a hero for the ages. How could I resist?
It's good.
She writes, "The Allman Brothers Band has a particularly juicy backstory. Bikers and booze, heroin and teenage groupies, even murder in prison."
Damn, that's
so it's all in there. It's all in the book. Check it out. Highly recommend. Galadriel had a particular interest in the story of the women surrounding the band. And of course, so do I. So there were a few different ways we could have focused this episode, but I thought let's talk about the women.
Absolutely.
She says, which I love.
Yeah.
"The men's life on the road was fairly well documented, but I knew it wasn't the whole story."
Yeah.
Don't we know that? So Galadriel luckily finally allowed herself to feel entitled to the stories and ask the questions as she became brave enough to ask her grandmother, the wives and children of other band members and crew, Dwayne's cousin and friends, and all of these people gave her an enriched picture of her father.
I bet you that's like where it really came together for her. Just talking to these women.
We always talk about how these memoirs and biographies are such a healing time. It's a healing practice and a journey for these women, and this is one of the hugest ones for sure I've ever felt. Her life was totally changed by doing this. Missing pieces were assembled. This story is my song of love built around the last chord. It's very poetic. It's really nice. It was a really nice read. So the women that I'm going to talk about include Dwayne and Greg's mother, Jerry, their cousin, Jo Jane, Dwayne's wife, and Galadriel's mother, Donna, and a little bit about Patty, who is Dwayne's first wife, but not a whole lot. And they were so young, you'll kind of see when I get there.
Okay.
So it's these private family moments and more of the boys' upbringing that was particularly shaped by these really strong women. So let's start with Jerry, their mother and avid motorcycle rider and lover.
Awesome.
The boys actually wanted to put her on a cover of their album. They have a photo of her driving a Harley Davidson when she was younger.
Yeah.
And she said no.
Aww.
But Galadriel says she has the photo on her desk and she looks at it and she attached the photo in the book. So I'll show it to you.
That's so cool. And it shows you how much their mother meant to them, that like that was even a consideration to them, you know?
Oh, yeah. So the first rebel on a Harley that the boys ever knew was their own mother. She
so cool.
Could, you know, outdrink the boys, but she was a beauty. Blonde curls, blue eyes, high-heeled shoes. She had been married straight out of high school before she married Dwayne and Greg's father in 1935. So this woman was like riding a motorcycle in the 30s and 40s. How cool is that?
Oh, she sounds amazing.
She met Bill Allman in 1943. And he was from Van Leer, Tennessee. Do you remember Van Leer?
I don't.
We talked about it in Loretta Lynn's episode.
Oh, okay.
So Van Leer had like the one, you know, county store.
Gotcha.
You know, you could come down from the mountains and yeah.
Small.
But like, you know, the homes had dirt floors.
Yeah.
Really small. So they were married and he was drafted to the war.
Yeah.
It's, you know, she met him in 1943.
Yeah.
She waited for his letters, she drove her motorcycle, and she worked managing a restaurant out by the airport. She spent time with her friends. She loved her husband, but she enjoyed her independence. Of course, when he returned, he was a changed man.
Yeah.
He survived D-Day and was never the same.
Wow.
He was reassigned a few different times and they moved all over. They settled in Nashville, and then along came Howard Duane Allman.
Ooh.
Followed by Gregory Lenoir Allman 1 year and 18 days later. Duane didn't adjust well to his baby brother. And I quote, any little part of Greg that dangled out of his crib was liable to get chomped.
Oh.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch. And organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm. You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales, because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Spectrum Business works with small businesses nationwide, so we know that running your own business means doing it all. Marketing, sales, inventory, customer service, and more. Spectrum One for Business helps you keep it all connected for just $49.99 a month. Get fast, reliable internet, advanced Wi-Fi with security shield, and a free mobile line for one low price. Stay connected and do it all with Spectrum One for Business. Only $49.99 a month. Go to spectrum.com/business to learn more. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
They moved once more from Nashville to Virginia, and while Jerry was sad to leave her friends and their community, she was happy that they moved because Virginia was beautiful and they would be living by the sea. She continued to work. She was working in a shop, which she felt kept her mind sharp and helped with money. She'd bring the boys down to the beach on her days off. In photos of the time, you see Duane smiling with intensity and Greg a little pensive. Their essential nature is captured in the frame.
Aww.
The boys lost their father fairly young. Bill had actually been murdered.
Whoa. I was not expecting that. Wow.
Yeah, a hitchhiker. just like an unwell person, unfortunately. Yeah. It was a wrong time, wrong, bad place situation. Wow. And Gladriel was a teenager when she learned this about her grandfather. She only saw his photograph for the first time when she was 30 years old.
Wow. I've never seen a photograph of my dad's parents or his brother or sister. I don't know what any of them look like.
Oh my goodness. He just doesn't have them?
He never did. And we've tried to find them and everything, and there's just nothing there. Yeah.
Oh, that's sad.
It's just a mystery to me. Yeah. I'm always like so curious to know, but it is weird when like you don't, like, you know, they exist, but like you don't have like a image in your mind of them.
I bet that there's someone listening that's like, this is what I do for a living. I'm going to help you. I'm going to help you find.
Well, hey, email us.
usethispod@gmail.com. When Galadriel saw the photo, she realized that the grandfather had her father's eyes and so also hers.
Yeah.
She realized that she shared something stronger with her father, and it was the bond of having lost a father at a very fragile age. She writes, learning that death is real and sudden and loss never ends.
Wow, yeah.
So the amazing Jerry moved back to Nashville for a while. She found another job, and she even turned down her first husband, who came back after hearing the news. Do you need me to step in? She's like, no, fine. I'll handle this.
I love her.
She was going to go it alone. Since she was working, the boys pretty much had the freedom to run around with the other neighborhood children and get into trouble. Dwayne was moody, and he would not only beat up on his brother Greg, but he'd like kick the shit out of anybody in the neighborhood. Nobody crossed him. He was that kind of personality. Do you know what I mean? He was always that kind of,
There's always the one you don't mess with.
Yeah, exactly.
Just know. Everyone knows.
But the boys stuck together like two sides of a coin. At age 8 and 9, the boys were sent to a boarding school, which of course brings up feelings of betrayal and then hard lessons learned within the school.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, why would Jerry send them there? She thought maybe it would kind of get them off of like running around like the streets a lot, maybe get them a little bit of discipline. Dwayne was just kind of pissed about it. And then Greg, you know, the baby, was just devastated and heartbroken.
Yeah.
But one important thing to note that came out of the boarding school situation was that it was during the music lessons where the boys learned how to play and discovered their like rare natural talents.
Makes sense. Yeah.
She did take the boys out of school not too long after, and they all moved to Daytona Beach.
Hmm.
Apparently, Jerry still lives in the house she'd built in
1959. Whoa. Cool. Yeah.
So then it was kind of there that they all settled there. She kept working, even though people were like, why don't you work less and stay home with your kids more? She's like, no, I've like raised them to have this kind of like certain lifestyle. We're not going to start like cutting coupons now. They're used to a certain thing. And so we're just going to keep it that way. So what Jerry did was, during the summertime, she brought in another very important female figure into the boys' lives, and that was their cousin Jo Jane.
Cool.
So Jo Jane was 15 years old when she came to visit for a summer. Greg and Dwayne were both 10 and 11, and then she acted as both playmate and babysitter. And these two women would go on to just support and encourage the boys and like who they really were for their whole lives, like in careers, basically.
Of course they did.
They were some of the most supporting and influential relationships on them.
Wow.
So together, the three of them would buy comic books, read them, listen to records, and even play pretend rock star. So Dwayne would be Elvis, Greg would be Ricky Nelson, and Jo Jane would take any part of every girl singer. Or she'd take the part of every girl.
Yeah.
She really encouraged their love of music and performance right from these young ages. By Dwayne's freshman year of high school, given the fact that he had so much freedom growing up, he had access to music and instruments and was encouraged by the women in his family. Galadriel writes, Layers of experience covered him like armor. He lived with energy and intensity, wily and intelligent, and a defiant nature, and the seeds of his creativity were germinating in his restlessness and discomfort. Hmm. Yeah, so I think probably losing his father so soon, his mom providing the best that she could, but being absent a lot, and then just kind of having, you know, the run of whatever, maybe being a part of the boarding school, really, it was really shaping him into this like kind of individual, or this kind of young person. But he had so much drive too.
Yeah.
The boys like to travel from Daytona to Nashville. Like they like to go see their old friends. As soon as they were old enough, they were able to go back and forth by themselves. They were always on the move. They picked up fashion from the different states that they went to and kind of brought it back to where they were living. And people were kind of like, what are these guys doing? But also kind of like, that's cool.
Yeah.
And so they started to begin their incarnations of all of the different bands that they'd be over the years, you know, same shtick, playing house parties, practicing their instruments, playing at the Y, playing fraternities, proms, that kind of stuff.
Gotcha.
And it was during all this time that actually Greg's gift as a natural singer developed. So this kind of reminds me a little bit of like the Hart sisters, where we have Anne and Nancy Wilson, and one, like they both have amazing voices, but one is a guitar player and one is the voice. And it seemed very much this kind of dynamic between this band
from what I'm
learning. So hopping back to Jerry, she encouraged Dwayne to get a job when he could. Again, just like stop running around and causing trouble. Although it doesn't sound like he got into any kind of big trouble.
Yeah.
So anyways, he did get a job at a strip club. And what did Jerry do? She let him.
Amazing. Like,
yeah. It's a paid gig.
It's a job.
Yeah.
A job's a job.
In music.
Yeah.
So she saw it as a great opportunity for him.
Love her. I love her so much.
In 1965, the brothers were offered a gig. The band was called themselves the Escorts. and they opened up for the Beach Boys.
Oh, cool. So
all of the encouragement and support was paying off. When Greg graduated high school, they renamed their band the Allman Joys and started to hit the road. When Dwayne was 17, in 1964, he and his 16-year-old girlfriend, Patty, had a baby.
Wow.
Galadriel would not find out about this until 1989 and through a letter from a stranger.
Oh, whoa.
Yes. So the little baby ended up being put up for adoption. And I think she was deaf, and she ended up like being adopted with a family that could accommodate her and knew all of the things to do to support her. So it sounds like, you know, 16 and 17 years old, giving up a baby for adoption with some, yeah.
They did what they felt was best for the baby.
Yeah, yeah. So even after Dwayne and Patty split up, they would continue to see each other sporadically for years after that. No one knows too much about her, and Galadriel was just told that Dwayne was private about some things.
Hmm.
When Dwayne was 20 and Patty was 19, they did marry, so that was his first wife. So, of course, the book goes on to describe in detail the evolution of the band, their sound, the first songs, the recordings, adding band members, Dwayne narrowly avoiding the draft and getting Greg to shoot him in the foot while Joe Jane watched on. So, and it worked. And it worked.
Oh, of course it did. Wow.
You know, them heading out to LA, being on the same bill as the Doors, meeting Janis Joplin, writing with Stephen Stills and Jackson Brown, their fashion, the atmosphere, the drugs, it's all there. It's all in the book.
Love it. Great.
But we only have so much time, don't we?
Yeah.
So let's talk about Donna. Donna is Galadriel's mother. Galadriel describes her mother as a gypsy and a rebel. Now, I know that we don't use the word gypsy anymore because the way that Galadriel is intending it to be is to describe somebody who is independent, free-spirited, and just kind of bopped around from place to place a little bit.
Like a nomad type of thing.
Yeah. As opposed to somebody who is a part of like a migrant tribe.
Yeah.
So Donna's mother was named Tommy Jean. So I love the name Tommy for a woman. T-O-M-M-I-E.
Cool.
I think that's so cool because I love the name Tommy. That was a name in the running for Dale. But I've actually already had a dog named Tommy. So I was like, can I have two dogs named Tommy? But maybe if we have a girl, we might name her Tommy now that I know that Tommy Jean rocked that.
Yeah.
Tommy Jean made Donna's clothes. She had the air of a movie star, but she kept a really strict home. She was, sounds like the opposite of Jerry.
Okay.
I like how they both have masculine names, Tommy and Jerry.
Yeah. Tom and Jerry.
Oh God. I'm sure Dwayne and Donna must have laughed about that at some point in their lives.
For sure. That was good.
Growing up, Donna went to Mass at All Souls Church. Her dinner table at home was quiet. They weren't a very lively, chatty family. She rarely gave her parents trouble. Her worst offense was being moody and withdrawn. She wore her bleach blonde bangs in her eyes and her eyeliner thick.
Nice.
Her mother, Tommy Jean, would catch her on the way out the door and try to rub off her eyeliner and tug down the hem of her skirt. Donna would just run outside, jump in the car.
Go, Donna.
Yeah, Donna did have to move out of her home at the age of 18 because I think she was feeling so stifled. So she moved in with her boyfriend and her mom would convince her to come home and she'd be like, no. But really, Donna was just staying at this guy's place. Like nothing was really seriously going on with them, it doesn't seem. In the summer of 1968, her father gave her a VW Beetle. Galadriel Ooh. Says, and she really got her look together. She bought a pair of knee-high boots and peach satin mini dress and round wire-rimmed sunglasses. And then she met Dwayne.
I can picture the image of her perfectly in that awesome outfit, meeting Dwayne. Yeah. Nice.
It was after a Jefferson Airplane concert.
Cool.
Galadriel notes that Donna was very impressed by Grace Slick, realizing that, oh, women can do that too.
Yeah.
And do it well. So as Donna was walking outside the auditorium down the road with a couple of friends, a van pulled up and Dwayne stuck his head out of the window and told Donna and the people that she was with that there was a house party happening now and asked if they wanted to come. What does that remind you of? Does that scene make you think of any other scene coming out of the concert hall? A van pulling up, being like, hey, you, this party at my friend's house. I thought
amazing.
I thought it sounded a little bit like the Almost Famous scene, but
absolutely, it's perfect.
Yeah, except the famous musician was in the van, not walking down the street, although he wasn't famous yet, as we know. So Dwayne really captivated the whole room at the party. He was that kind of guy. He was charismatic. Eyes were on him. He was an entertainer. And after that, he invited Donna to Forest Park, and she went. So they saw each other again after that, and they pretty much were dating immediately. But before they really got together, Dwayne said, well, just wait until you meet my brother, Greg, because he's the looker of the family. So you might actually decide that you want him. Aww. She met Greg, and she decided that Dwayne was, in fact, the one for her. She wasn't sure if he was serious, but either way, she was like, no, I like you. So they hung out together while Dwayne was living with Jo Jane in St. Louis. So yeah, it's like it kind of got to the point too where Jo Jane was always there, that if the guys ever needed a place, it's always like, yeah, you've always got a couch or a room or whatever with me.
Gotcha.
It doesn't matter where I am. So she was always, they always had her. She liked Donna. She approved.
Good.
And of course, like, I'm sure Joe Jane's approval meant everything to Dwayne.
Absolutely, yeah.
Donna worked a job proofreading checks at a printing plant. She went with Dwayne when he played gigs, like when he traveled to Nashville, for example. She was actually preparing to sleep with him for the first time, and anybody for the first time. So she went to the doctor to get birth control pills. The doctor asked her if she was married. She said that she wasn't. Then the doctor asked her if her parents knew that she was there getting those pills. She said they didn't. So she was denied birth control pills.
Oh my God. These stories are just so infuriating. And to know that it's still, you know, a hassle for some women or impossible for some women to get birth control is just insane.
Yeah.
Wow.
So Galadriel writes, I never realized how quickly it all happened. My parents met and changed the paths of their lives in a matter of months. I thought there must be many stories about their time together before I was conceived, but I had heard them all. It occurred to me with a shock. They were really strangers. When I suggest this to my mother, she bristles and says, why does everyone always want to count the days we spent together? Haven't you been in love? Don't you know how important every moment is? How infinite time feels?
Wow.
This book is also filled with letters that Dwayne sent to both Donna and Jo Jane.
Oh, cool.
So it seems like Donna and Jo Jane allowed Galadriel access to all of this stuff. And I feel like you can really access someone's thoughts and feelings through this kind of correspondence. And what a wonderful thing to hold on to and to have kept.
Yeah.
In the letters that Dwayne sends to Donna, he addresses her as skinny girl. These 1968 letters from the road was like a time capsule with his handwriting that shows the love that he felt for Donna. It was a memory of the good times. So in the book, we learn that Greg and Dwayne took some time off from each other. Greg headed to LA and was writing and working with others. And this is probably a good thing for them because they had been so close and so intertwined that it was important for them to go off and have some time alone and figure out their own gifts and their skills and realize who they were independently and then come back together. And then we know what happens when that happened. They pretty much took off from there, you know?
Yeah.
So the band, once Greg came back from LA and Dwayne said, let's get it back together. Let's round out the sound. Let's decide on the name. We'll be the Allman Brothers Band. They really were just like on a rocket ship to the moon after that. Galadriel learned more about her father's journey, what kind of man he wanted to be before his life was cut short, by reading a 1969 appointment calendar that he had gotten for Christmas. In that, Dwayne wrote, this year I will be more thoughtful of my fellow man, exert more effort in each of my endeavors professionally as well as personally, take love wherever I find it, and offer it to everyone who will take it. In this coming year, I will seek knowledge from those wiser than me and try to teach those who wish to learn from me. I love being alive, and I will be the best man I possibly can.
Oh, that's so heartbreaking knowing what's going to happen soon.
Yeah.
He sounded like, you know, he was such a good human and wanted to be a good human being and just wanted to live life and experience things. And
Yes. Another thing she grew to learn about her father and the Allman Brothers Band is that, I quote, they knew the debt of inspiration they owed to the bluesmen of the Mississippi Delta and Chicago, black players whose influence could easily be erased by white musicians covering their songs. Hmm. When it came time to play songs like Stormy Monday or You Don't Love Me, Dwayne would announce the artist names out loud into his microphone before they played their songs at every show. Elmore James, T-Bone Walker, Blind Willie McTell, Muddy Waters. It was the very least he could do, giving credit where it was due.
Amazing. Good for them. Yeah.
Yeah. On top of this, she says, Dwayne was a curious and hungry young man who tapped into an aspect of the culture in which he was raised. White culture seemed to offer only escapism and denial in the form of pop music. Dwayne's quest led him to the other side of town, to black culture, where deeper communication was happening. White artists like Dwayne have been relying heavily on black artists to lead the way forward, always. Creativity isn't born out of comfort and ease. At its best and most moving, music is a means of survival. Blues artists understand that best. Dwayne needed to play. He played to live, and you can hear him living in every note he ever played.
Wow. I can see what you say about like her writing being so beautifully done. Like every quote is just...
I mean, and which is why sometimes I'm sorry for all of the quotes, but...
It's worth
How can you paraphrase that?
Yeah, like, exactly. Beautiful.
At 18 years old, Donna became pregnant with Galadriel. They were thrilled. She was born premature, and when Donna woke up after being sedated during the birth, Dwayne informed her that he had named her Galadriel. And that, don't worry, it's already written on the birth certificate.
Oh my goodness. Wow. Okay.
I was like, okay, thanks. He said if she had been a boy, she would have been named Les Paul Allman.
Glad we got Galadriel then.
During this time, Donna tried to be understanding and accepting of the life on the road and all of the girls that were beginning to hang around the band, or pretty much were straight from the beginning. If she was going to be a part of his world, she was going to try her best to be cool about it.
You gotta be. I mean, it's gonna happen whether you wanted to or not.
Yeah. Donna bonded with the other girlfriends and wives in the band, and they were like family, and they were all raising the children of the men in the band.
Yeah.
They lived together. They cooked together. They saw their men on stage together. One day, Donna saw with her own eyes how Barry, Linda's guy in the band, was with another woman. And Dwayne explained to her, like, that's just how it is.
Ooh.
Get lonely on the road or whatever. Or it's just...
That's just how it is.
You know, and Donna's like, but Linda's so beautiful. She's the mother of his child. And then kind of realizing like, oh.
Yeah. Ugh.
Yeah. So Galadriel talks about their short and sweet relationship, how they decorated their first apartment together, how they read books together, shared clothing, went fishing, and then ate it for dinner. And so you can see that by Galadriel discovering all of this, putting it down, writing it into a narrative, how it's so healing for her.
Yeah.
Dwayne himself did eventually have other relationships while still with Donna, until one day he met someone who he did have this like true connection with, and it was just too much for Donna to handle because she started coming into her life.
Oh, okay.
Like actually meeting her.
Oh.
So on top of that, all the guys did was tour. They were gone so often. And then of course the drug use was becoming heavier and heavier, from weed to heroin.
Yeah.
Someone who is mentioned in this at like the time of the band doing the like really blowing up in this way is a blues player named John H. Hammond.
John H. Hammond.
Hammond.
Yes. Okay.
Russell Hammond.
Yep.
So the band was playing at the Fillmore. They were opening for B.B. King, Buddy Guy. The band and their wives and children would all gather together and celebrate the band's success with food and drink. The band would only be home for a few days that next year. Galadriel writes, when the band was home, the wives would gather and cook large meals and everyone would come over. The men would play in the music room until the meal was served. Then Barry would raise his glass of wine and stand up. Having everyone in his band and everyone they loved around a dining table felt like a significant accomplishment, and he acknowledged it with a toast.
Hmm.
This kind of information is what Galadriel got from Linda. So Linda was also a part of helping her weave some of the story together. And, you know, so that seems really nice. But then if the women would ever show up to a show unexpected, the guys would be like, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
There are, of course, some more tales from the road, more albums coming out, stress and pressure mounting, drug use increasing, you know, opening for Pink Floyd and getting a better reception than them, and then being asked to play longer and then getting into a fight with the guys in Pink Floyd. It's all, you know, it's all kind of there. So I'm going to finish with a couple of good quotes, and then we're pretty much wrapped up. So as we know, Dwayne died in a motorcycle accident the following year in 1971, pretty much at the heyday of all of this.
Yeah.
Hard drugs and groupies were there from the first day. I had imagined an early innocence in 1969 when marijuana and marriage were all anyone wanted, but that's a child's fantasy. When everyone was living together at the hippie crash pad on College Street, the men used to go to the local colleges and check girls out of their dorm rooms for the night like library books. If our mothers didn't know, it's partly because they didn't want to know. So I guess content warning is coming. Yeah. Content warning coming. Skip 30 seconds ahead if you are sensitive with banned sex. I know the tale of communal case of crabs that forced everyone to sit around a hotel room together with their cocks lathered, laughing, which seemed funny until it was mentioned that they had gotten into this mess by pulling a train. A poetic way to say a single girl took on all of them. There was Twig's legendary carousel full of slides. Each one, a different teenage girl, naked and splayed, and his habit of passing around copies of the statutory rape laws in the different states they passed through.
Wow.
There were stories of girls who waited by the side of the road topless and climbed into the Winnebago ready to be the jackpot in a poker game.
Oh, yeah, that was brutal.
Blowjobs were given on the side stage within sight of the crowd. They bawled on moving motorcycles, on the hoods of cars still warm from a ride, in gas station restrooms during a quick refueling, in Rose Hill Cemetery on graves in the moonlight with other men's wives. I was often told that my father wasn't the one who got up to this mischief, that he'd opt out by holding up the book he was reading, but he held his most private cards very close. The crazy thing is, I wanted to know. Even as I felt a dark rage growing in me, I never shut down the story. I will always identify with the women, the ones at home, and even the girls on the road. But I understand that the temptation for a pack of 20-year-old rock stars was impossible to resist. If you were generating the kind of heat they were putting out on stage, it would have been impossible to go to bed and shiver alone. My question, though, is why did they marry and have babies so young? Did they need a different kind of life at home, a soft place to fall? Or did they get trapped when our mothers got pregnant? Did they really think of their families that way? Or did they just want it all? Well, they got it all, but it didn't come cheap.
Oh, that is so good. She's such a good writer.
I know. So, did you catch that poker game reference?
Oh, yes, I did. That's so interesting. I think a lot of it really has to do with giving these young men so much power, and it seems like a lot of them tested their power. It's like, let's see how much we can get away with, and then they get away with that thing, and then they think of something crazier, and it gets to a point where maybe they don't even recognize themselves anymore and like the things that they're doing. But like, just being allowed to have that power is so dangerous and leads to so many dark things.
You know? Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And yeah, some of it's fun. And then sometimes it can go to a place that's not so fun.
So one thing that I find is just such a common thing that we get a lot is, say we, especially like on TikTok now, if we're talking about like an Elvis and a Priscilla and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, is that people are saying it's not appropriate. Like, we get a lot of comments being like, it's not appropriate to say, well, that's just how it was back then. Mm-hmm. But the thing was, it seems, is that it was appropriate or laughable for these men to be passing around the statutory rape law journal in that time. Do you know what I mean? Yes, it was still wrong then. Yes, it was.
Yet it was still accepted by everyone around. No one was questioning it, at least aloud to everyone else, it seems like, which is dangerous. But it is such a fascinating thing to think, because like, yeah, it's hard to look back and think, well, how could you ever have thought these things were okay?
But you know what I'm talking about, when you, when somebody comments like rapist, and then it's like, yes, it was a really messed up time. back then. And it's crazy what was accepted then. And then they respond back being like, that's a cop out.
Yeah.
For you to even say that. And it's like, is it? Like, I'm still a bit not fully.
And, well, that's an interesting thing too, because it's like a lot of these things were public. They were published in magazines at the time and everything. And no one was saying anything. Like, everyone knew about Lori and Sable. And again, they were in magazines being promoted that way. So of course, yeah, we look back and it's like, wow, how was that accepted? But it was. It was not only accepted, it was promoted in a way, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. All right. So we'll move on to the wives. The girlfriends. This is a quote from the book. The relationships between the women in the big house were every bit as significant and satisfying as the brothers' relationship to one another. Candy, Linda, and Donna worked hard to make a peaceful and lovely home. They cleaned and baked banana bread and chased the baby girls around. The wonder of being mothers deeply bonded Linda and Donna. Candy was a working woman out in the town at the boutique all day. Her thing with Greg was long over. He had lived with her at the house for a time, but he didn't stay for long. She found a bundle of love letters from the other girls tucked in with his clothes in her wardrobe, and then that was that. She started seeing Kim. The women would pass a joint in the evening and confide in one another, describing the men's bodies and comparing their moves, the little things they liked, and they'd lie stretched out on the floor with the stereo turned up, playing the beautiful music the band sent home. The women felt like muses, hearing the love they shared reflected in the songs.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, so that's it. That's a bit of Galadriel's interpretation of her father.
It's also interesting to note that they are a Southern band and they grew up with like Southern ideals of, you know, what's expected and what you're supposed to want. And it's also crazy, just crazy to know how young he was when he died, because I remember being a teenager and like knowing Kurt Cobain died at 27 and like knowing that was young, but it still seems so old. Like, well, he had a whole life before that, but then you get to that point and then you pass it and you realize like, wow, this guy like 24 when he died.
Yeah.
And you realize like he never even lit. He was a kid. Mm-hmm. He was a kid himself, you know. It's crazy. And to know that he had that much of an impact on music and everything, all the years that we lost when he died, like all that music, who would know, you know, where he would be now? And like how much music they would have made.
Let's finish with this last quote from Galadriel. It seems like she's speaking to Dwayne here. I want you to know I understand you better than I used to. There's detail to my longing now. There are moments fully imagined in places where questions used to be. I have walked down streets where you lived and I carried you with me as I traveled. Instead of feeling the weight of you in the center of my chest like the echo of a punch, a new sensation has bloomed in me. It is a longing I do not recognize for a life of my own. I suddenly want the speed of life to pull me forward. I want to live unafraid. I missed the lesson you played so clear and strong every night of your own grown life, the lilting line from Joy to the World, winding wild through your hands in the middle of your song. You tried to tell me from where you are to live my life. I'm sorry it took me so long to hear you.
What a beautiful episode. Thank you so much for that. And I'm so glad she wrote that book and was able to go on that journey. And I'm sure it filled a hole that she probably, you know, grew up with. So that's beautiful.
Yeah. And I barely gave you any like Allman Brothers dates and facts and concerts and albums and
interviews about the women. Because
I'm sure there are 100 biographies like that are
exactly
straight, you know, the. Yeah.
No, so. It was perfect.
Good. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah. Galadriel. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Her writing is as beautiful as her name.
Yeah. And then you can find YouTube videos of her reading parts of her book. And if she's listening, if you're listening, Galadriel, and you've made it all the way here, thank you so much for writing such a beautiful book. I hope we did it a little bit of justice presenting it in this smaller, compact version.
Yeah.
And call me.
Yeah.
Email us, musespod@gmail.com. That was super fun.
Yeah, thank you so much. I think listeners are going to enjoy this one. It's a little different. And as everyone knows by now, like, we're daddy's girls.
True.
Right? So yeah. I'm glad you did this. Like, we needed a daughter telling a tale on this show. So
yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. So I'm sure there are a few other daughter stories out there as well that we can look into. And in the meantime, everybody can check us out on TikTok, MusesPod, Instagram, Facebook, same places. Join us on Stereo Tuesday nights.
Yeah, buy our merch. Patreon. We have a Patreon.
Holy
moly. We're everywhere.
We got it all.
We got it all.
Okay.
What more do you want? What more do you want?
And we'll see you for another free episode next
yes.
week.
See ya.
Bye. Muses is researched, edited, and produced by us, Chantel Lemieux and Lynx O'Leary.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my two wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I'm hoping to open up the conversation about balancing careers and family. The one thing I constantly hear successful people say, without fail, is that they wish they'd spent more time with their kids. That's time no one can get back. So I decided to create Business Dad, to engage in the conversation about how we're spending our time now, providing a forum for successful dads to share their joys and challenges of being a working parent. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier. And while this podcast will talk about business and will definitely be featuring dads, I think everyone can learn something from these incredible conversations as we unpack the expectations we all have about careers, relationships, and ourselves. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.